I miss a green, for example, I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. We are back with a mailbag podcast with Kyle Nathan. It's been a while.
Yeah, long time no talk. Got a lot of good questions this time.
Yeah, lots of travel recently. It's been cutting into my time to do podcasts. So,
yeah, but you've been all over the place. California, playing some real good tracks, huh?
Yeah, I've gotten some good golf in. And now I'm hunkering down in Chicago winter. I looked at my output last week, and because it was my first full week, at home, and I was like, God, so much easier to get stuff done when you're not traveling.
Oh yeah.
How do your member guests go? Yeah, you were grinding.
Oh yeah, that's right. Grinding. It was a lot of fun. We played okay. It was an awesome member guest though. Carlton Woods is a really cool place. They had a good format, you know, the good night stuff, and it was a lot of fun.
Did you win?
No, God no. It's not match play, which normal member guests are. It was a really cool format. It was best ball for 9 each day, and then a modified alt shot for 9 each day. Obviously handicapped. You know, I think we did okay. I don't know what we actually finished in our flight. But I love that format. It's so much. But 9-hole matches, when you have the handicapped events, are like impossible, because you get one down and you're giving someone shots, you're like, you've lost. You know, you lose the first hole, you've almost lost. But in that format, there's definitely room for, you know, blow-ups potentially on the alternate shot, and it's different. I never play alternate shots, so I had a lot of fun playing it. I wish there was more stuff.
Alternate shots kind of hard. There's a lot of pressure.
Oh yeah, it is. You don't want to be the one that missed the 4-footer. Or, you know, I chunked a chip on this par 5. That was cool. We were right next to the green in 2, and I just laid the sod and hit it like 6 feet. I'm like, sorry, bud. that was good. But yeah, you're right. You don't want to be the one to hit that shot. It's kind of excruciating.
Yeah. It's a lot different. Do you watch much golf this fall?
You know, sparingly. I watched a lot more football than golf, to be honest. It's hard for me to go all year with golf, which, I mean, these guys joke about the 5-day off season, but at some point I'd like to see the PGA Tour actually do an off season, because I mean, I can't imagine playing it, let alone, you know. It's hard to, you know, sometimes in the Asia events it's cool because it's on at odd hours. That might stay. But then I think when they get back, they should take a break for a couple weeks or even, you know, a month or two. But, you know, to me the season doesn't really start till the Kapalua.
Yeah, that's, I mean, there, the false stuff is just so, some of it's contrived too. You know, like the Asian swing is good, and I understand the growing the game, like a broad aspect of it. But like just giving guys free FedEx Cup points is like contributing to the problem of, like, you know, it's so hard for new guys to keep their card and there's so few spots. But like then you just give all the veterans a bunch of FedEx Cup points to start the season, you know, and just a limited field, no cut events. Now, like, people will say, oh, nobody will show up. Well, like, originally, I believe the fall events were to get the lesser-known guys and the young guys start, you know?
Right.
And now it's become kind of like the opposite, where it's a easy way for veterans to feast on FedEx Cup points.
Yeah, you just load the boat with some points early in the year, and, you know, then you can coast when you actually have to play full fields.
Yeah. So, and then the young guys never get starts. So,
did you have any takeaways from the fall season so far?
Not really. I mean, you just see, like, I mean, Patton Kizzire, I thought he was going to win something last year. He's a good
player. Yeah, you've talked about him to me quite a bit. You're a fan.
Yeah, he's I think I'm the same age as him. He might be a year younger, but I back when Golf Week was great and you'd get those, like, the big Golf Week. And
oh, yeah, those are great.
You go in there and you could check all the scores from all the tournaments. I mean, talk about that was awesome. And then you'd see his name all over stuff. And I know he had struggles early in his pro career, but then he wins the web.com, you know, moneyless. Like, I feel like if you win the web.com moneyless, you've got a lot of talent and, you know,
bad game. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you have the ability to win a lot. So it'll be interesting to see after getting a win, what happens. And, I mean, lots of stuff going on. What do you think, you know, Tiger, what are you expecting?
Oh, man. It's what's crazy to me is reading the comments on his, you know, every time he tweets, reading the comments, and, like, people have the most they really actually do have the most unrealistic expectations of him. Like, I almost feel bad for the guy. They're like, you know, like, oh, God, he's going to, you know, Augusta, it's over. He's won it. And it's like, but, you know, as you know, I'm sure everyone that listens to this and you know and I know that, I mean, it's if he wins a tournament this year, it would be incredible. You know, it just won. I mean, hopefully I'm wrong and he wins eight, but I would be really surprised if he won a tournament. And in this tournament, he played well last year. It's a fairly easy course by tour standards, so I wouldn't be surprised if he showed some flashes of brilliance. I mean, it's still Tiger Woods. I don't think he'll contend, but I wouldn't be shocked if he threw a 65 up there, 66, something like that. How about you?
I mean, I think it's a huge win if he makes 12 starts this year or 10.
Right.
Look at, like, Patrick Cantlay. I think he made like 11 or 12 last year, and you could tell, like, he was being very careful with his back. I mean, if he's in contention a few times, like, that's great. Like, it's what has it been? I mean, the amount of years since he's really played competitive golf has been.
When was the last time he was Sedgefield? Right, that was the last time he was in contention.
Yeah, and I mean, that was he hadn't made many starts that year. I mean, that was what, 2015.
Yeah, that was probably 2015.
So
fall 2015. So over 2 years ago.
Yeah, so, I mean, if he makes some starts and gets at least in the mix where, you know, he might not eat. But, like, what he showed last year, the thing that impressed me so much last year was his, like, the long iron and mid-iron game. But, of course, he was, you know, in his prime, probably the greatest iron player of all time.
Right.
So it's, you know, more interesting, I found, were his comments regarding the golf ball.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that.
I mean, it's. I think this is something.
You're a proponent.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about how you feel, but being someone like I shouldn't be gaining distance year over year. I work out less and less. I practice less and less. And you know, this last year I noticed like I hit so many. It's golf's become driver wedge for, you know, plus handicap players and better, I feel like.
Right.
And the ball doesn't curve. I mean, it doesn't really move. Like, something I got to put together is, like, think about the greatest, 10 greatest shots of 1999 versus the 10 greatest shots of this year.
This year they're all, like, you know, DJ's nuke drive over the pond, you know, against Spieth in the playoff. They're all like just Justin Thomas's, you know, nuked sky high dead straight three woods at the U.S. Open. They're all kind of, you're right. They're all, you look back in 99, you'll see some movement. I've been talking about what we talked about the one podcast. I've asked a bunch of people would follow have ever won a major in today's game.
I put it in this newsletter this morning. That's the most alarming thing to me is that you've, you know, golf in all aspects, I believe, is like it's so great because of variety, whether you're talking about architecture, style, like players' styles of play, and what's happening because of the ball. And the fact that like it, you can't miss with it is you can swing so hard. So what's happened
Right.
is the finesse player is pretty much non-existent in today's PGA Tour. I put stats in there, but like the average at the end of 2016, using the end of the season 2016 rankings, world rankings, the top 15 players average distance rank on the PGA Tour is like 19.5. And if you compare that to 1997, the average driving distance rank was like 72nd in the world of the top 15.
Wow.
So, it's like power has become a necessity to even compete on tour.
The dead giveaway for me that something needs to be done is when these senior tour guys comment on it and they're like, "Well, I hit it 25 yards now, 25 yards farther now at 53 than I did at 28." You're like, that doesn't make sense. I could buy me going from 32 to 34 and hitting it 5 yards, 10 yards farther, whatever. I don't know any better. But for something that egregious where, Bob Estes or whoever's hitting it 25 yards further than when they were 30, that to me is crazy.
Yeah, we can ask Paul Goitos that next
Yep,
week.
we're gonna
Big
have to.
news. We'll have Paul Goitos, Senior Tour legend and PGA Tour, Mr. 59, on the pod next week. We'll do.
Looking forward to that. I heard he's a great storyteller.
Yeah, it'll be fun. So if any listeners have questions, fire them our way on Twitter or email, whatever. Let's get into some questions.
All right.
K-Tex, does Brian Harman become a household name this year with a few top five finishes?
I would love to see Brian Harman become a household name because I love his game. I don't think just a few top five finishes will do it, though. In golf, you're judged so much by majors. He obviously was close at the US Open. I think one, maybe two more, obviously one major would get him a household name, but maybe one to two more times really in the thick of it on Sunday. I say that because, you think of guys like Duffner and Keegan. Duffner and Keegan squared off at that PGA. Neither were really household names going in. They became household names when Keegan won. And the third guy in that PGA was Brendan Steele. And I'm not really sure he's a household name, but he's been in contention. I mean, I don't know, late Sunday, but he's been in contention in majors quite a few times. So I would say Brian would need to contend late on Sunday and to become a household name.
Yeah, I agree. He only has two wins. So you think about guys that only have two PGA Tour wins. He's like right now, I would say Brian Harman's in the Kevin Chappell, Gary Woodland boat of players. Which, that's a really good boat of players. He's
Yeah,
definitely,
right.
he's 25th in the world. He had a really, looking at his stats, he had an incredible year last year. He had 10 top 10s and 27 starts. Which included a third, a second, and a first. The second coming at the U.S. Open. So I think he's a guy you look at. He's 31 now, and some of these guys that have a little bit more all-around game, like Kevin Kisner, comes to mind, take a little bit longer to get to that elite level of play, just because they don't have that one, dominant skill like a Jon Rahm, where he's a, he hits the ball forever and really good and putts well. So I think he could be a good guy to bet on. If he wins again, if he gets to five PGA Tour wins in the next 2 years, I think he'd be a pretty big name, right?
Yeah, I agree. Speaking of only two wins, this is a good question from Will Knights. Who has a better career when it is all said and done, Justin Rose or Ricky Fowler? Ricky's got, I think, four wins, right?
Yeah, he's got
Two.
7 worldwide wins and I think 4 PGA Tour wins, if I am not mistaken. He's got the Players, Deutsche Bank, Wells Fargo, Honda. Yeah, four
mm-hmm.
PGA Tour wins. So he hasn't won on the PGA Tour since 2015, which is, or actually won the last year at the Honda. I'm an idiot, but I mean, I think
he made everything at the Honda.
Yeah, I think it's a really good comparison is Justin Rose. I think I put this in a newsletter a week ago. Over the last 2 years, Ricky is second in worldwide top 10, or third in worldwide top 10s behind only Spieth and DJ. So he's clearly an elite player in terms of consistency. The wins just haven't come. But winning a golf tournament is so hard. It's, you know, a bounce here, a bounce there.
Right.
You know, I think consistency always goes overlooked. I think Justin Rose is actually like a really good comparison for Ricky Fowler. You know, has kind of started to pile up wins later in his career. And, you know, one major, if you count the Olympics, two majors, but I don't think you can really count the Olympics as a major. You know, at this point in Ricky's career, getting one major would be a big deal. What would you say over, under 1.5 majors for Ricky's career?
If I were going to set the line, I would probably set it at 2.5. So I would take the over 1.5. I think he might get 2, maybe 3. He's going to have one of those weeks like he did at the Honda where he just makes everything inside 10 feet. And, you know, he's obviously a good enough ball striker. And he might have a major if he didn't have the propensity to, you know, make triples, which he seems to have gotten rid of.
He did that at the PGA, though.
That's true. He did.
Like the first round, he made that triple.
Yeah.
And then
he was the favorite. Yeah. He was basically everyone's favorite after playing well at Erin Hills.
He was in the thick of it for the Masters. He was in the second or final group. He was right in it at Erin Hills.
Didn't he finish runner up in like 3 or 4 of them the 1 year? Was that 2015?
2015, yeah. Or 2014, I think.
2014?
Yeah, because it was when Rory won at Valhalla.
Yeah, he should have some. He should win it too, I would think. That question, though, I think. I mean, Rose was tough to beat. U.S. Open, 2 WGCs, 20 wins.
An Olympics.
You really want to celebrate that Olympics?
Hey.
No, I'm with you. I'm a fan of the Olympics.
There aren't many Olympic gold medalists in golf.
No, there's not. That's a real exclusive club.
Maybe he's the greatest of all time, just based off that.
He's an Olympic gold medalist.
Yeah. I'll
never forget those. What were you gonna say?
Was it Chandler Egan?
Yeah, H. Chandler Egan, Exmoor guy.
Yeah, he's who you're compared to. You might be the second greatest player in Exmoor history.
That's funny. What I was going to say about Rose was those two long irons he hit at 17 and 18 at Marion were like two of the greatest shots I've ever seen back to back in my life. They wound up rolling past the hole, but they were just so pure. I think it was a 4 iron on both, or maybe one was a 3 iron. But I mean, under that kind of pressure to hit a 3 or 4 iron that basically rolls over the hole, two shots in a row is just, it's insane to me.
The other thing with Rose is that he's finished runner-up at the Masters twice, and both of those times it was one of like the lowest score, or the one time it was the one of the lowest scores ever at the Masters, mm-hmm. and he didn't win because of Spieth.
Mm-hmm.
He's had his fair share of close misses too. I think that's a really good comparison.
Yeah, I like it too.
All right. How many majors would Big Cat have won during his prime, 97 to 2008, had club technology, and we'll throw the ball in there, not advance? Drew Bontadelli.
I'm going to say he would have broken Jack's record. I don't know how to quantify how many, because like you said, you know, bounce of a ball here, bounce of a ball there. But I will say he would have at least 19 majors.
I would agree with you. I mean, the advancements in driver heads, that, and then like the hybrid is a really overlooked advancement. Because you talk to, you know, any great players of, you know, that are older generation, the thing that Jack had that, you know, Arnie had was this ability to hit towering long irons. And, you know, Tiger was one of the greatest long iron players of all time. And the advancement, I think that hybrid came out in what, like 2001, 2002, 2003. And all
was
sudden,
it that
one? Yeah. All of a sudden, everybody could hit high, long irons. So I think he would have broken the, and then the ball. I mean, technology in general for the PGA Tour has just closed the skill gap.
Yeah, there's no such thing as an elite shot maker anymore. I mean, the hybrid is a perfect example. And the hybrid just, you can't move a hybrid. It just goes dead straight. It's hard. When you have to move it, it's hard because it's just, you can't do it.
Yeah, it is incredibly hard to move today's golf ball. Like, especially if you're in the rough and trying to cut an iron. I mean, it's almost impossible.
I'm with you. Okay, let's say, speaking about the golf ball, why do you think a player like Billy Horschel is so vocal about the golf ball? He's adamant it doesn't go any further. Self-preservation on tour, sponsor dollars, not woke. That's from Luke Smith.
So, I would say he's not very woke. I think, if anything, people get in a bubble and people hate change.
Right.
PGA Tour players who have made millions of dollars because things are a certain way are obviously going to resist a change that might hinder their ability to make money in the future. I don't think Billy Horschel would be one that would be, he might actually be helped by.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
Because he's an all-around player. He's not overly long. I think he would be helped by a rollback of the ball or technology. Like if they went to a smaller driver head, I think he would be helped. I think there's a bunch of people that would be hurt by going to a smaller. Like I think a smaller driver head is another thing that should be considered. Every other professional sport, with the exception of a couple, have different, you know, equipment. Like tennis has a slower ball than what, you know, the consumer uses. Baseball uses wooden bats. Like, mm-hmm. Why, you know, golf has just been, you know, hindered by not slowing things down.
Right. If anything, they use equipment that's better than the consumer can use.
Yeah. Really the only thing. So I would say Billy Horschel just is afraid of change, and you know he's got to protect his livelihood.
Yeah, I completely agree with that because he's making millions of dollars, like you said, and the difference between him playing on, you know, the difference between anybody playing on the tour and, you know, folding shirts might be a couple of shots around. So any kind of change where, you know, you're not sure at the end result, you're going to get freaked out because that's your livelihood and it's such a high pressure game. And I'm with you.
So Tiger's event is next week, the Hero World Challenge, and 18 person field that gets full FedEx Cup points. Why do they get full FedEx Cup points? Al Pandera wants to know.
I don't know why they get full FedEx points. It's another FedEx Cup fluffer job. The field's obviously really good. It's what we talked about it before the podcast. It's the top 11, the defending champion, two sponsors exemptions, and a few others sprinkled in there. But I mean, it's 18. It's nine twosomes. I mean, we've had, you know, bigger Friday afternoon skins game at our club than this Hero World Challenge. So it's hard for me to justify, you know, it's, you can jack up the purse money because that's, you know, sponsored, who cares? But the FedEx Cup points, it's hard for me to justify giving a regular FedEx Cup point allocation to the event that has 18 people in it. I mean, that's insane.
It's kind of like a glorified skins game.
Mm-hmm.
I think, yeah, they want to get people to show up, and that's how they get them to show up. And obviously, Tiger, when this event started, was, you know, such a force in the game that I'm sure that had a lot to do with it. And once you have them, it's hard to take them away. It's a perfect example of something that is, you know, quite ridiculous and skewed, and how the tour skews to the elite player. Like, this combined with the WGCs, where you get free FedEx Cup points, free money, like, it makes it, you know, it makes it very much easier for those, the top 15 players to get to the, you know, tour championship. But that is also what the PGA Tour wants.
Right.
So
I don't necessarily have a problem with the World Golf Championships as much as, I mean, that's, at least you have more than 18 people. 18, I mean, 18, that's, it's so small.
It's almost like it's just a little more than 10% of a normal full field event.
If you picked 18 people, say, you know, before the next full field event, you said, all right, pick 18 people who might win, you probably wouldn't pick the winner. That's just a very small sample size.
You didn't have Austin Cook last week?
No, I did not. Unless you're Paulie, then you might pick the winner. Yeah. But me personally, I'm not going to pick the winner out of 18. Uh-huh. Unless it's Louis.
Yeah. Well, he hasn't won in a while, so.
I'm still waiting.
Yeah, it's turning into a losing bet.
I know it is.
Even when it wins, I'll still be a loser. Unless he goes on a flurry.
I'm not committed now.
All right, we got a bunch of, you know, non-related tour questions we'll get into now. Joe Estes wants to know, what was your favorite pre-Pro V1 ball?
I played the Top Flight Strata. I don't really know why. I went back to my parents' house a few weeks ago, and I saw I had a full sleeve in there, and I took it out. It's so soft. I don't really know why I played it. Maybe just to be different, because everyone was playing the Tour Professional or the Tour Prestige maybe at the time.
It wasn't because of Jim Furyk or Hal Sutton?
No, but you know who I remember being associated with Strata was Omira. So it might have been a little bit because of Omira. But I, for whatever reason, I think I just wanted to be different. So I'm going Strata.
I think I messed around with the Strata. I was into the Max Fly Revolution too.
Oh yeah, I played that for a little bit. I forgot about that ball.
That was a good ball. When I was younger, I like loved the Wilson Staff Titaniums. Me and my buddy.
I never played that.
Yeah, I mean, we were like at the time 13 or something. We hadn't even gotten to high school yet. So that was another ball I messed around with. Slazenger, RIP. That was the original Big Cat.
Mm-hmm.
Playing off that, what's the most gimmicky piece of equipment you've ever convinced yourself to try? From Steve Misner.
You know, two came to mind. One was the Sabona bracelet. I mean, in defense of myself, I was probably like 16 or 17, but I thought it was like the coolest thing ever. And I really was convinced that it was going to get into my bloodstream and help me play better golf, even though it was for like, I think it was made for like 60-year-olds with arthritis. But I was like all about it. I loved how it made my wrist green. And I learned shortly thereafter any kind of jewelry is questionable. So I went away from the Sabona wristband. And then the other thing was that diamond face wedge. Do you remember
yes.
that?
That's what mine was.
It was so cool. You could spin the ball back. Like, I mean, how old was I? Probably 14 or something, 15, 16. But I remember you could just spin the ball back like 20 feet, and it was so cool. But your golf, you'd get up there, and your golf ball looked like it was, you know, in a IED. Like it was.
Remember the commercial with the they hit it off the back of a dump truck.
Oh yeah.
it was spin on concrete.
Oh my god, that club was so ridiculous.
You know, last year at the Mid-Am, I found somebody left a Warrior hybrid on the tee during a practice round. And I was like, who at the U.S. Mid-Am is using a Warrior hybrid?
I don't even know that I know what that is. What is that?
It's like an infomercial club on the Golf Channel.
Oh my god.
I mean, maybe he was just dropping it because like it was his buddies or something. He was like, get this thing out of my bag.
Golfers get desperate. I've been there. I'll try something if I'm not hitting it well.
Yeah.
Here's a good one for you, Mr. Anti-RTJ. Have to choose one. Only play RTJ courses for the rest of your life, or two, listen to Michael Breed announce every golf tournament you will ever watch. That's from Will Knights.
This is a great question because, you know, if you go with number two, you're subjecting yourself to a headache. I mean, you lose one of the beauties of golf. Like, one of the things I love about golf is how calm and peaceful it is. I enjoy, you know, on Saturdays that you could fall asleep on the couch, wake back up, and, you know, you feel fine. You know, but Michael Breed would definitely change the dynamic of watching golf on TV. I think I would go to a mute. You know, I'd probably listen to music and have it on mute and just, you know, think of my own stuff. I think I'd probably still go with Breed, though, because, like...
Oh, my God.
I think only playing a style of golf that makes me angry for the rest of my life would be a... Yeah, I couldn't deal with that.
I think... I asked you, actually, before the podcast, why everyone gives RTJ courses so much hate, because there's some good, like Point of Woods, Valderrama in Spain, I played there like 10 years ago. It was like one of the best courses I've ever played in my life. Country Club in North Carolina is awesome. Spyglass, like there's so many good golf courses that he's done. And I guess, you know, I know Spyglass, a lot of people hate on some of the idiosyncrasies of it, and I guess the Robert Jones Trail, there's some, you know, Magnolia Grove I like. There's a couple I haven't liked. But, I mean, when you're comparing that to listening to Breed, I mean, it's a no-brainer for me. I'll take RTJ all day.
I mean, the rest of your life, though. Like, you can't play anywhere else. You never get to play, like, a Pine Valley or Cypress Point. Like, all those are off the table.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard choice. Rock in a hard place, right? But... I still, you can just go play Spyglass.
You know, RTJ's style of architecture is kind of everything I hate. So
what do you hate so much about it?
It's just, it's thoughtless, you know? It's hit it down the middle, like, it goes back to, like, having options. And
right.
Like,
no width?
Yeah, like, you know, I think you put a good player on an RTJ course, it's really pretty simple. You know, you hit it straight. It tells you where to hit the ball. I prefer a course that, you know, makes you make a decision on what line and what shot you're going to hit and then hit the right, you know, distance on that line, if that makes sense.
No, I like that too, but I don't have a problem. I like both.
Yeah, it's I you know, just can't. I'd be in a constant state of frustration if I played only RTJ courses when I played golf. I'd probably stop playing also.
We should go do that best ball at Mid Pines and go play Country Club in North Carolina. That I like those courses. They're really, really, really good.
All right. RTJ did some good work, you know. He's, mm-hmm. he's better than his stunt.
I agree with that. Okay, here's another choose one or the other. Free membership at Cypress Point or restorations of Pebble and Augusta National back to what made them great in the first place from Joe Smith.
You know, if I was...
Former Maryland forward.
Yeah, former number one pick in the draft.
Number one pick, yeah.
And former Bull.
Thanks for being a fan, Joe.
if I'm being selfish, I would take the free membership at Cypress Point. For the good of the game, you would pick the restorations of Pebble and Augusta National because Augusta has a tremendous effect on the rest of the world of golf and what they perceive as good golf. Augusta is still a great golf course in its current state, but it could be way better and set a much better example as to how a golf course should be, you know, maintained. You know, it's gotten more narrow, it's gotten more rough over the years, and then obviously the immaculate conditioning, it gives people a false sense of, you know, what their local golf course should look like. And, you know, money goes to build, you know, creating a golf course that looks like Augusta National when they shouldn't have that. So I would say, if I was speaking as the fried egg founder, I would choose the latter. But if it was just Andy Johnson, I would choose the Cypress Point free membership. What about you?
I'm with you. There's a reason I don't have a Prius. I would go with the free membership. And I will say, though, that picture of seven that I tweeted it out. I know a bunch of other people were tweeting it out. The picture of seven at Pebble from, I think, 1928, that looks so amazing. It's not even funny. You wonder why they, I mean, it's so, you know, the bunkers are not nearly as defined. It looks phenomenal. And I wonder why, I wonder what the pushback is to not go back to that. That's what bothers me.
Think about the money shutting down Pebble Beach for a year would cost. Like, think about not only just the resort that's already booked, you know, wall to wall.
Right. You'd have to do it 3 years in advance, 4 years in advance.
So you have a resort that charges more than any other resort in the world and is booked all the time. You know, it's not like there's a shortage of people going to see it. And then think about, like, the tourism to that community if Pebble Beach was completely shut down.
Well, they'd have to go enjoy Spyglass, RTJ.
Yeah.
So Pebble's a business. I understand that aspect of it. What about Augusta National?
Oh, that's, I think, I mean, that'll be interesting. I think that has a lot more chance to happen than a Pebble restoration. And I think if you look at, like, if you know, I have a bunch of old, maybe I'll post a bunch of old Augusta photos with this podcast, but you know, if you look at those photos, like, the 16th hole is completely different than it was today, and I personally think it looks a lot better, but they had a similar rough style bunkering, and it would require the Augusta National membership to move away from the perfect conditioning. You know, like, mm-hmm. You couldn't do the rough style bunkerings and keep, like, the immaculate landscaping and the azaleas. So, because that would just not fit. So I think, but Augusta would be, I mean, it would be so cool if they went back. I mean, Tiger talks about it in his book that he recently put out. I would recommend it just for the last chapter. The rest of the book is really bad. The last chapter is quite good because he talks about, you know, the golf ball and all the things that Augusta National has changed. You know, they've leveled some greens, they've made it more narrow, they've added trees, which just limits the, you know, the beauty of Augusta.
Right.
So it's, you know, Augusta is an example of, you know, who knew better, Alistair McKenzie or the Jones family.
Right. I'm always amazed, even watching, like, Tiger 97 highlights, how much different the course looks with no rough. It looks so good.
Well, it's the ironic thing is, like, think about, like, the whole concept of Tiger proofing. Like,
right.
So say, like, you know, you're playing a match against a friend of the pod, Chad from Deer Park. So Chad's a mid-am that he nukes the ball and he hits it, like, dead straight. So Kyle is a little bit shorter, maybe not pretty straight, but, like, playing a golf course that's really long and really tight, you know, you would have it be at a much less, you know, much bigger disadvantage to Chad that's on a long and tight golf course.
Right.
You know, because he, you know, so I think with, you know, with a lot of rough. So the idea of Tiger proofing, that's combined with equipment, like the lengthening of golf courses and the, you know, reduction of the ball actually going offline has what is what's created less and less, you know, variety in the game of golf from a player aspect.
I'm in agreement with that.
What's your, we're going to change subjects. This is too depressing. Will Willie Orbison with the Thanksgiving tomorrow. What's your favorite Thanksgiving dish?
My favorite Thanksgiving dish is stuffing. I'm a huge fan of stuffing. I think it's very underrated. I wish I could eat it all year round, actually. Like, I have like a stuffing burrito. I just, for some reason, it's like the only thing I eat leftovers of. I feel like I just heat a bowl of stuffing and eat it. I don't like turkey. I think it's the worst meat. I'm actually excited because we're going out for Thanksgiving tomorrow. And that's a buffet, so I'm just going to eat a bunch of crab legs and stuff like that. So I don't have to worry about turkey. So I'm excited about that. How about you?
I will echo your love for stuffing. I'm really, Thanksgiving to me is, I get in with big starch, you know. I'm in with mashed potatoes.
Stuffing. It's a big time carbo load.
Yeah. And, you know. The turkey I like, but I could eat just the, if it was just mashed potatoes, stuffing, and gravy, I'd be all in.
Yeah, I load my plate up with that and maybe do like one small slice of turkey when my mom makes it.
I think, what's the most, outside of turkey, what's the most overrated part?
I would go the cranberry sauce. I'm not a big cranberry fan.
Yeah, I hate that too. Similar taste.
Yeah, we should have Thanksgiving together. Just stuffing.
Just, yeah. It's, we'd have like a pound of deli turkey meat and stuffing.
I like that. All right, here's an architecture one.
All
right. Thoughts on the architecture, width, and angles at Lost Marsh in Hammond? This is a three-part question. That's part one from Tom Delaney. I've played there once in a scramble. Like it was their Chili Open or whatever they have. So it was in November. I can't really speak to it because I don't really remember it that well.
So the first and only time I played Lost Marsh, it was a few years back, and my boss had been raving about Lost Marsh for, you know, probably about a year. And you know, I was on a big Ravislow kick, which is, in my opinion, the best public golf course in Chicago. And he finally convinced me to play Lost Marsh with him. And after the first five holes, if I wasn't with my boss, I would have gone in and called it quits. I was, it's like, there's no way, it's completely impossible for the average player. It is. And then it almost gets worse when you get to the open area. You know, after the first five holes have water on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And it's extremely narrow. But then you get out to the other the back nine or the back 14, and it's like, you know, you'll have holes where you hit it in the fairway and you're blocked out by trees. That's a place that should shut down.
Yeah, should shut it down. From the little I played it and the little I, you know, remember hole by hole, I did not remember liking it. But if you want to go play there, that Chili Open's cool. Everyone bring, you know, it's a scramble. Everyone brings their own, you know, their best chili, and then you can sample all the, you know, 20 different chilies or whatever after the round. It's kind of fun. Okay. Grand Geneva or Geneva National for a cost conscious weekend trip?
I'm not in on either. I'd go play somewhere else. I'd just stay at their hotels.
Try to go play Strawberry Creek.
There's That's a really fun. Cool, if you don't mind playing really scruffy, not good golf courses, like not well-maintained golf courses, there's a course called Spring Valley that's like a old Langford Moreau course. And if they did like a restoration there, it'd be essentially like Skokie Country Club, which is, you know, one of the best courses in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not in good shape. The fairways are way too narrow. There's way too many trees, and the greens have shrunk. But I'd rather play there than any of the Grand Geneva, Geneva National options.
Okay, what's a good way for someone to volunteer in the Chicago golf community? I have some friends that are pretty active with the First Tee program. So if you wanted to get in touch, if anyone wanted to get in touch with any of them to find out more, just send me a Twitter message or whatever. You have any good ways?
Yeah, that Jason Way, who's on Twitter, is like Jay Wizze. He's been like, it's pretty cool. He's been leading this like whole like improvement of Canal Shores, which is a neat little course in Evanston. It's right on like kind of the, and it's got the L going through it. It's small. It's been run down, but you know, he's kind of like with a group of volunteers been, you know, making it significantly better by making it wider, adding some cool bunkers, like, you know, digging them out by hand. So that would be one I would recommend if you're into golf course architecture. It's you know, improving a little community golf course that, you know, had fallen on tough times. So that's one I would get into.
Okay, here's a long question about Hall of Fame and architecture. Tillinghast, McDonald, Ross, McKenzie, Dye, Old Tom, Crenshaw. Though more for playing than architecture, given the induction of class of 2002 and no mentions of architecture and achievement in his citation, and somehow Robert Trent Jones, which this should be rescinded for actual crimes against nature, along with DPRK style three generations of punishment passed down to his sons and grandsons for their continued awfulness. This is the list of Hall of Fame architects. So the question is, how in the hell are Rayner, Colt, Thomas, and Maxwell not in the Hall of Fame, and should we start a pitchfork and torches movement to make that happen? These gents getting shut out of the Hall is insane, even if the Golf Hall isn't as revered as Cooperstown or Canton. It's still a Hall of Fame.
It's fascinating to me that golf, there's this like glorification of the PGA Tour and the legends of the game from like a playing side. And let's just say that roughly, you know, let's say 25 million golfers are in the world. I mean, if you look at like social media, like the PGA Tour has something like 2 million fans. So you're saying like, we're glorifying this subset of golfers that's watched by only 10% of the sport versus the greatest architects of all time who designed the greatest golf courses of all time. And golf courses, every single person that plays the game of golf plays golf courses. So to me, it's fascinating that architecture is constantly, you know, put to the side when it's something that's relevant to every golfer. And PGA Tour, and like, you know, I write about the PGA Tour three times a week, but that is, you know, viewed by only, you know, a handful of golf fans, and it receives all the, you know, essential attention and praise. So, I mean, those guys should be in the Hall of Fame. George Thomas didn't design that many golf courses. I would say you should have Harry Colt for sure in the Hall of Fame. Seth Rayner, maybe. But, you know, then you start to look at today's generation. It's like a three-part question. So today's generation of architects, like, who would be Hall of Fame worthy? I think you'd look at, like, Corin Crenshaw, Pete Dye. Pete Dye would definitely be in the Hall of Fame. Corin Crenshaw, of course, Crenshaw's already in there. I think Gil Hans is on his way. Tom Doak deserves to be in the Hall of Fame for, like, the influence and how he's ushered in this minimalism architecture. And, you know, he's got a pretty good list of golf courses. So the Hall of Fame just, it doesn't have a focus on architecture yet. So when it does have a focus, you know, and hopefully for like the modern era architects, like people get inducted into the Hall of Fame before they die, because the majority of these architects have gotten inducted when they're dead, you know? So like, at least they get inducted in the recognition while they're still alive. You know, I think that, you know, one can make a pretty good argument that Harry Colt had a much greater influence on the game of golf than Jim Furyk.
Right.
So, and a question here. We'll wrap these questions up, and then we'll go into overrated, underrated. Is PXG the big baller brand of golf from Philip Johnson?
I love that analogy. I would say yes, if you had to have one, although I don't think anyone offends your sensibilities or my sensibilities like LeVar Ball does. You do have, you know, the super over-the-top expensive product where everyone's like, what the hell? I'm paying $500 for a wedge or $700 for a pair of shoes. Or and, you know, Zach Johnson didn't play the PXGs in the Ryder Cup. Lonzo Ball sometimes wears Nikes. So, yeah, I say that is a very good comparison.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's outrageously expensive and adds like minimal, you know, if there's any benefit, it's so, so minimal. I think it's almost more of a, it's more of a statement at this point.
Right.
I don't want to offend Chad from Deer Park, a PXG player, but, you know, if you're, you rock PXGs more for, you know, look at these sick clubs I have than, you know, these actually. You know.
He does hit his 8-iron like 210.
It's insane.
But it's probably a 6-iron loft.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure the technology, I've heard that the technology is really, really good. But, like, I don't think it really makes that big of a difference.
I haven't seen really anybody play their driver, now that I think of it. I mean, I know people got it, but I've never seen anybody, like, play it.
Somebody told me, somebody thought, or I read somewhere that they thought like that whole PXG lawsuit with TaylorMade was like a play to leverage, because, you know, TaylorMade got bought out by like a private equity firm who has no interest in being in a lawsuit because they're trying to sell a company, you know, quickly.
Right.
And that play was an attempt to leverage, you know, that lawsuit in order to get TaylorMade to like allow them to use some of their driver technology to improve their driver.
Makes sense.
So yeah, I heard the drivers like in the fairway woods are really bad. I think the irons are decent, but is it, you know, are they five times better than a regular, you know, any other brand?
Be hard for me to, it'd be hard to prove that.
Yeah. Let's get into overrated and underrated.
Okay.
What do you think about Twitter debates on the ball from Sean Smith?
You know, it's typical of Twitter. Everyone's got their 2 cents and, you know, they're staunch in their beliefs. But, I mean, I'll say overrated. I think the fact is something has to be done at some point and probably will be done. And that's all there is to it. And until that action is finally taken, which as in golf, you know, it takes a few years. So you'd be looking at, you know, 2020, 2021, maybe at the earliest. Until that happens there, I mean, you can debate it all you want, but there's nothing really, to talk about until they actually decide to do it, which they clearly should. And anybody that takes the other side of that argument is, you know, just wrong.
It's a such a polarizing topic. I tried to keep my thoughts off Twitter as much as I could. I only got in there for like a couple jabs. Just it's not worth. The amazing thing is when you get into something like that is how like you waste like 4 hours of your life, and the person that you're arguing with is never going to change their opinion. So I think they're actually extremely overrated because when these debates come out, like each person is so far extreme on their side that there's no changing of their opinion. You know, like,
right.
Like if I got in a debate with somebody with Wally Uline, like both of us would end up, you know, we could debate for a month straight and we'd both stay in the exact same spot, you know? All right. Overrated, underrated simulator golf in the winter?
You know, I see both sides. If you're using it as a, you know, to improve your game, I'd say it's a little overrated. I know the technology's gotten pretty solid, but I just, you know, there's no substitute for the real thing. If you're using it for fun and, you know, maybe have a few beers with your friends and whatnot and just chill out, then I'm underrating it because it's a fun thing to do. You have to have, you know, realistic expectations if you're actually using it to try to get better.
Yeah, we got a lot of questions about winter practice. You got any tips?
No, the one winter I came out in the spring playing pretty well. I went to the golf center in Des Plaines, which is kind of like this, you know, you hit from inside to outside. You know, I'd go there 3 times a week, and I had one of those $100 little putting mats in my basement, and I'd hit, you know, some putts every week. But there's no way to really do it perfectly. But, you know, if you can hit balls a few times a week, if it's a dome or, you know, a half range or anything like that, and, you know, just hold the putter in your hand, hit a few putts, I think that helps. Better than doing nothing.
I would say if you're ever thinking about making some wholesale changes to your swing, the winter's the time to do it, you know? I think it's a good time to if you're not like a lesson taker but want to take lessons, I would take them in the winter, you know? I enjoy time off. I think it helps me. But I would say putting, you know, practice putting, hit balls every once in a while. I try and chill out in the winter, but
that yardstick putting drill we talked about before is a good one in the winter.
Yeah. If you just hit putts on a yardstick, that's all you need for putting, personally believe.
Shane Trubisky, yeah. Playing around by yourself.
Oh.
Underrated, overrated.
So underrated.
I'm with you.
I like miss it. I played one round, one of my last rounds of the year. It was actually at this Manakiki place where I wrote the On the Skillet about today. It's this public course. It was like mid-October. I went out there on like a Thursday morning. It was $20 to walk, and there was nobody out there. I played through one like 90-year-old man. there's nobody out there. It was like a spiritual experience, you know?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of it. I think either you get to play really fast, you know, you play in 2 hours, which is awesome, or, you know, I like to play worst ball scrambles sometimes, because then you get a real indication of how bad you're playing, or, you know, like, worst ball scrambles are hard, but, you know, you can't really do that with other people, so you have to play by yourself. So I enjoy it. You put some music on, and, you know, you relax in the cart, check your phone, you know, there's no hustle to it. It's just relaxing.
Yeah. There's nobody around that you have to keep, you know, happy.
Right. Good lag. Good lag.
Yeah. What about Brandel Chamblee from K-Tex?
I know a lot of people don't like Brandel. I've never really had a problem with him. He has some hot takes, obviously, but I think he's fine. I mean, he wants what's best for golf, and, you know, although he may say some outlandish things at times, I think he's fine. I have no problem with Brandel.
Yeah, I think he's underrated.
I agree.
What I like about Brandel is he is an analyst that clearly does his homework.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever stance he's going to take, it's usually he's done a lot of research, and a lot of people get jaded because he has such strong takes, but at least he takes a side. One of the things that bugs me about golf is how people don't say what they really believe a lot. And, you know, there's so much money from, you know, equipment sponsors and stuff that limit what people can say. You know, if I'm sponsored by Callaway, like, or if I'm sponsored by Titleist, like Titleist would be a good example. Like if Titleist paid a ton of money to the Fried Egg, I'd never be able to talk about how the ball is out of control.
Right.
Like you can't do it. So that's a big problem with golf. And I really like that Brandel actually speaks his mind on most topics. I know a lot of people were saying that Brandel was in the bag for Titleist with his latest take, but you know, at least he takes a stance, and you know, take it for what it is. It's one man's opinion. It's not the Bible.
Right. All right, here's one for you. Overrated, underrated shoelaces, a.k.a. thoughts on the BOA technology after beating your Air Westies to the ground. That's from Sal Hutton.
Yeah, I got a lot of shit recently on Twitter. And for the longtime followers, they'll know that shoelaces and my shoes before the Air Westies were a big problem. So I got these BOAs on the recommendation of Chad from Deer Park, and I'm not gonna get BOAs again, although I you know, they were nice not having to, you know, tie your shoelaces, but shoelaces are definitely overrated, because if they break, you're kind of screwed. Like my last shoes, they broke, and then I went into the store and there was two different size shoelaces of the same brand. Like I had Echoes and they had two different sizes. And I looked at them for a good 10 minutes, trying to think about which shoelace to buy. And I looked at them and I said, you know, these big ones must be for men and the little ones must be for women. I get the shoelaces out, I put them into my shoes, and they're like 10 inches too long on each side. So from that point on, I had to like triple knot my shoelaces.
Oh my God, your shoelaces were outrageously long.
They were so long that sometimes they'd get caught on the spikes and I'd like trip.
I'm going to overrate both shoelaces and BOA. I don't like the way BOAs look. I mean, you still have to like bend over and tighten them. It's just, I mean, they're both bad.
What about going to a pump style? Like the old basketball shoes.
I actually always thought I would like high top golf shoes. As a fan of basketball, for some reason, like I always really, really wanted high top golf shoes. But then I see some of the, you know, you see Ricky or Keegan wear them and you're like, oh God, those look terrible. So I think I'm out on those too. I'm basically out on any footwear.
Yeah, I would agree. Maybe I'm in on barefoot golf. See, that's what I'm in on.
Tevas with spikes. Oh, that's such a bad look.
All right, that's a wrap. Let's we'll cut this. We're at like an hour, so.
Perfect.
Have a good Thanksgiving. I hope.
Yeah, you too.
I hope this helps somebody with a long drive somewhere. And yeah, we'll talk next week with Paul Goidos. Big time.
Sweet. You know, thanks, guys.
New format. Later.